Alexander Alexander die Dame Dame Kija.
Vrindavan Dame Kija, Mathura Dame Kija, Navadvip Mayapur Dame Kija, Jagannathpuri Dame Kija, Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Kija, Bhakti Devi Kija, Tulsi Maharani Kija, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Kija, Gaura Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Stavya Himati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Yajinamana. Namaste Saraswati Vede Gauravana Pachamana Visesa Samadana Paskatana Visitana. Vande Nam Shri Guru Shri Chakra Kamala Shri Guru Nivashra Vashra. Shri Guru Samsara Vichatana Sarvana Vadana Kandikam Sam Sajiva. Sadvaitam Sadvaitam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitana Deva. Shri Radha Krishna Param Sahagana Vita Shri Vishakam Vitascha Panchakapa Chivischa Kripa Sindhu Vita Chitam Pada Vyava Shri Vimana. So this story is full of some supernatural elements which many times people in reading through the scriptures and the stories will take them as some sort of we'll take them as some sort of mythology. But we should keep in mind that any time we're going to discuss something of the origin of the universe or the purpose of life, we end up going to the supernatural, just like the scientists talk about the origin of the universe as a Big Bang. And they talk about the Big Bang as starting with the singularity, something that's infinitely small and infinitely dense. Well, that's pretty supernatural, right? We have no experience, according to the laws of physics, chemistry, mathematics, of anything infinitely small and infinitely dense. And then this exists before time and space. So if it exists before time and space, where does it exist? There's no space. So that's pretty supernatural. And then it explodes. Why? It just explodes. So that's pretty supernatural too. And then when it explodes, it creates a sun and planets that don't bump into each other. And that's all pretty supernatural. So we shouldn't reject these stories just because they have amazing elements that we don't normally perceive with our senses in our everyday life. So the story starts with the world being overburdened, with governments that were full of corrupt leaders, harassing the citizens, cheating, disregarding the natural flow of creation. And the Earth planet is a personality, Bhumi, and she feels these demoniac rulers to be a great burden on her. But it wasn't a burden she could deal with by herself. So we know in the story of Maharaj Prithu that the earth stopped supplying all of the fruits and vegetables and grains to humans. And before that time, there was no need of agriculture. Just like something like here in Hawaii where, you know, you can just pick avocados growing wild on the trees. Actually, it wasn't until Azelle that I even knew we have an avocado tree in our backyard. So, you know, there's all these fruits growing wild on the islands. It used to be like that all over the planet. So a long time ago, there was no need of agriculture. There was really no need of an occupation. Everything you needed was just grown. This is nicely described. There was not even the varnashram. It was just hamsa. There was one order of life. And then the Earth planet said, I'm not going to do this anymore because the people on the Earth have become demoniac. They're not utilizing my gifts properly. And that was when Maharaj Prithu leveled the earth and had people start engaging in agriculture. So at the same time, also 5,000 years ago, the personality of the earth said, I can't deal with this. It's too much for me. There's all these demoniac governments and all these sinful people on my planet. So she took the form of a cow and she went to the chief architect, Lord Brahma, and said, you've got to help me. I can't deal with it myself. It's beyond my capacity. And he said, well, I really can't deal with it either. It's something, it's beyond me as well. So Brahma called for all the planetary rulers So each planet has a person in charge of it. And let's go together to see the Supreme Lord. So this is the process whenever we have something in our life that's beyond our capacity. So often we get things that we can handle, right? We cut our finger, we just get a band-aid and put it on. Right? Some little things, things not working right in our house, sometimes you just move a chair to another place and everything works out. And we just spend a little less money on this or whatever. But we have things in our life that we can't handle them. It's beyond our capacity. So we can go to our immediate authority. You know, the kids can go to their parents, wife can go to the husband, you can go to the government offices in Hawaii. You know, if you're in ISKCON, you can go to the GBC. But you can come to a point where you go to your authority, and you go to your authority, and you go to your authority, and they say, I'm sorry, I can't help you. I'm sorry, I can't help you. And often what we do then is we just get really frustrated and just yell at our authorities some more. Right? And we go to complain to other people. Oh, I talked to my father and he still wouldn't do it. My husband wouldn't do it. You know, the government wouldn't do it. My boss wouldn't do it. But what happens among the celestial beings is when they go to higher and higher levels and they don't get relief, they say, let's go to the Supreme Lord. Okay? So many years ago, I was in Vrindavan and I didn't like something there in the management of the Krishna Balaram temple, and I've been trying to fix it for many, many years without success. The only result I got was that the managers were annoyed with me. So at one point, Virajanpada was there in the temple room, and I went to him to complain. And he said, have you talked to the manager? Yeah, I've done this. Have you talked to this person? Yeah, I've done that. Have you talked to this person? Yeah, I've done that. He said, well, why don't you go talk to Balaram? And I said, Balaram? Why Balaram? He said, well, it's not really Radhashyam's temple. It's really Krishna Balaram's temple. And I said, okay, but why Balaram? He said, well, he's the older brother. So I went to Balaram and I just said, you know, here's this problem, you take care of it. And then I went to go, and a few months later, it was taken care of. So this is the way that the universe is run. And Brahma and all of the leaders, all the Dikpatis, all of the leaders of the Lokapatis, they all go together and they sit in the Svetadvip on the shore of the ocean net. So the Svetadvip, this white island, it's like an embassy of the spiritual world. Right? Like just here in ordinary earth life, you go to the Russian embassy and then you're not an American property anymore, you're a Russian property. So they go there, we have this problem on the Earth, and you might wonder, you know, the Earth's not a very important planet, right? I mean, I'm sorry to break this news to everybody here, but the Earth's a very insignificant planet, one speck of dust floating in one little universe. This is a very small universe, very small planet. So why should all of the leaders of all of the planets be concerned with the fact that there's bad governments on Earth? What does it matter? So although the Earth is very insignificant from one point of view, the Earth also has a very important function. So the function is that in this human life, it's like a juncture. And from human life, you can go to anywhere. It's sort of like an airport hub. You know, you can fly out to so many different places. So this human form of life is very important. There's a slogan in the Bhagavatam, I don't remember the Sanskrit, that the demigods are wanting to take birth as human beings on Earth, which from our perspective, especially in Kali Yuga, seems rather incomprehensible. Why would a demigod want to become a human being on Earth? You know, we just really can't figure it out. You know, you have a demigod body, you don't sweat, you don't need a toilet, you don't have to wash your clothes. Right? You don't have to get gray hair. And why would they want to become a human being on Earth? Because the human form, although not very wonderful from a material point of view, it's an ideal juncture for self-realization. You have just enough awareness that you can attain self-realization, but you don't have all of the bewilderment of the higher powers on the upper planet. So all of the Dikpatis, the Lokapatis, they're very concerned about what happens on Earth. It really matters to them, so much so they leave their post there with Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma goes into a mystic trance. And then the Lord says to him, yes, I already know about this. This is my business. This is my business. Whenever there's a dharma, I come and clean it up. I make again dharma. So this happens frequently. just like in our home. You can't clean your home only once a year, yes? I mean, you could, but it wouldn't be very pleasant. So the home has to be cleaned regularly. The body has to be cleaned regularly. Right? In our relationships with other people, we have to restore it regularly. It's not something that you can just let fall apart. So it's just like that with dharma. Just like we saw in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's time, that the Gaudiya Vaishnavism had become degraded, yes? Had to be restored so soon after Mahaprabhu. And this restoration has to keep happening over and over and over. You can't just say, okay, now it's done. You know, now it's like, Prabhupada came, now it's done for the next 10,000 years. You know, constantly, 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 it has to be purified, purified, purified. So Krishna says, yes, I already knew about this problem, and I was already going to come, but before I come, some of you also come. So you are my servants in the universe, you appear. You appear in the dynasty of Yadava, you appear in the Vishnu dynasty, and you prepare the way. So therefore we have the appearance of persons such as Vasudeva and Devaki. Now of course one of these demoniac kings was Kamsa, and he was a really nasty fellow. If we think about some of the very cruel and evil regimes that exist on the earth today, so we can think of that in terms of Kamsa. Kamsa was stopping the chanting of the mantras. He was stopping the performance of sacrifices. But Kamsa was trying to have it so that the earth no longer produced in abundance. Kamsa was stopping any sacrifice that included remuneration to the priests. Basically anything that would aid in the peace and prosperity of the planet, simply for his own power and aggrandizement. That was all he was interested in. We see this, of course, happening today, where the earth is being destroyed, the animals are mistreated, the air and the water are polluted, innocent citizens are being killed, just so a person can have a little bit of power and money for a very short amount of time on this planet. Amala Bharajalaji, Vakatama. It is just flickering happiness like a drop of water on a lotus leaf staying for a moment. And for that, they're willing to cause so much pain to so many living entities. So this was the position of Kamsa. Now Kamsa had a cousin, a sister, Devaki, and she married Vasudeva. And as they were getting married, Kamsa was driving Devaki's chariot to the home of her husband, and as he was doing that, with some affection, because even among the demons they have some affection for family, right? Even among the mafia they're kind to their family members. So, seriously, so there he's driving and then there's this voice from the sky, Kamsa, you're such a fool! You have affection for your sister and brother-in-law, but her eighth son will be the cause of your death. So Kamsa immediately, this is the general mood of a materialistic person. As soon as there is some threat, then I immediately want to attack. Immediately. We can contrast this much later with Maharaj Purkit, that when he was told, you have been cursed by the son of a Brahmin, he didn't counteract at all. He said, oh, Krishna's taken the form of this curse. Let me accept. Let me accept. Whatever he wants. Jivan and Narayana, you want to kill me, you want to save me, it doesn't matter. But Kamsa was, oh, somebody's doing something against my plans? Let me stop it immediately. Let me counteract. There's a very nice story also with Maharaj Prithu, when Indra is taking disguises to steal the sacrificial horse. And at some point, I believe it's Lord Brahma, who says to Maharaj Prithu, that as soon as you try to counteract difficulty in life, you enter into the darkest region of ignorance. Pretty amazing. I've been meditating a lot lately on how Krishna says that one who is silent and satisfied with anything is very dear to him. And that satisfaction is one of the austerities of the mind. I was talking to a friend of mine about this and saying, you know, I really would like to give up complaining. And she looked at me and she said, do you even complain a lot? So it's very common that, you know, when things don't go our way or there's some kind of difficulty, immediately we want to just counteract it. Let me fix it. Let me make everything the way I want it. Ishvara hum humbo. And that was Kamsa's mood. You know, well, I have all my plans for world domination and wait a minute, I'm going to be killed. As if there was some kind of news, you know. And so immediately he wanted to kill Devaki. Immediately take out his sword. And this is response of anyone under the grips of the modes of nature. Anyone, what is it? One who acts helplessly under the modes of material nature. My dear friends, as soon as we're under the modes of material nature, we are like a puppet. We become just reactive. Oh, there's a threat to me and my ego and my life. And we all do this, even if we're trying to be devotees, yes? As long as we're under the modes of material nature, then there's this immediate reaction. There's some threat to me. Let me counteract it. Let me attack back. Let me defend myself. I mean, and to the point you think it's Devaki's wedding day, she's come, his sister, he's in front of who knows how many hundreds or thousands of people. Right? What is it? As soon as one becomes angry, one loses one's intelligence and falls down, you don't even care who's looking, what's going on, what's happening, just immediate reactive. I'm gonna kill her. But we do this, don't we? I mean, we don't pull out our sword, usually. But maybe we pull out our sword-like tongue, huh? Or something. So Vasudeva tries to instill some sense into Kamsa. And he said, listen, Kamsa, I hate to break this news to you, but everybody has to die. You know, whether you die in this way or that way, everyone's going to die. So why are we so upset about the cause of your death? He says, and really, Dehi no sminita dehi komayamirvanam jirapatadehantarapati adhirasthakchanamuyite. You're changing so many bodies, you're just going to go into another body. It's okay. And the way it works is like an inchworm, that it establishes where it's going and then it lets go of where it's come from. This didn't work. He said, you're not going to die when the body dies. You're eternal. Oh, but this is my life, my identity. So that didn't work. And then he said, you know, really this world's like a dream. Our real life is somewhere else. We're not really the doers here. Nothing here has any real substance. It doesn't have any real meaning. It doesn't really matter what happens here. And that didn't work. And then finally, Vasudeva was thinking, all right, well, it was the eighth child who's supposed to kill Kamsa, and if that's going to happen, it's going to happen. None of us can stop it, and I can't save I can't deal with what's going to happen with the children. Let me just save Devaki for now. I'm going to have to let the Lord worry about the rest. So it was very nicely explained that, you know, we do our best and that's all we can do. We do our best and then it's up to Krishna what happens. The result is in his hands, like he says to Arjuna, fight for the sake of fighting without considering gain or loss, victory or defeat, honor or dishonor. So he said, all right, Kamsa, I'll tell you what you're worried about is the children. Look, you're not worried about Devaki. It's not Devaki who's going to kill you. You don't have to kill her. You're worried about the children. And, you know, we just got married. We got new children. Maybe we won't have children. Some people don't have children. You know, it happens. Maybe there won't be any children. And I'll tell you what, if there's any children, I'll give each of them to you. And you can do with them whatever you want. So that was a pretty amazing thing. You can imagine how Devaki must have felt. To hear her husband say this, and he's going to turn over all of our children to my brother who's about to kill me. And now you might think that under the circumstances that Vasudeva and Devaki wouldn't have wanted to have any children. I mean, if you knew that your brother was probably going to kill your children, you probably just wouldn't have any. But because they understood that their eighth son would kill Kamsa, and they had come to the planet to do that service, therefore they had their first child as soon as possible. And Devaki says, you really want to bring him to Kamsa? No, I gave my word, Vasudeva said. So he takes his child, Kirtiman, to Kamsa. And Kamsa had a moment of soft-heartedness. Again, this happens even with the demons. Just like even the devotees, unless they're completely pure, they may have their moments of hard-heartedness. And the demons, they may have their moments of soft-heartedness. Oh, it's okay, Vasudeva. It's okay, you know. This child isn't going to kill me. I don't need this child. You can take him back. And Vasudeva was thinking, wow, Thompson didn't kill the child, but I can't really trust him. One cannot trust anyone who's under the modes of material nature. It's not possible. Therefore, we say the non-devotees have no good qualities. Because even if one manifests good qualities, as soon as there's a large enough threat to one's ego, then all the good qualities go out the window. Right? Like, I'm sure all of us here are honest, right? No thieves in the room? I hope there's my question. So, but would anyone here say I'm completely 100% honest? Anything? So what's the point at which we give up our honesty? We give up our honesty when the threat is great enough that we think, oh, I can't be honest here. So as long as there's a line above which we will give up our good qualities, we don't really have good qualities, really all we have is self-preservation. Therefore, Kamsa couldn't be trusted. Now we have a very interesting little wrinkle in the story, where we have one of the most fascinating personalities in the Lila. And this is, of course, who enters the Lila at this point?
Narada Muni.
Before Balaram. So Narada Muni is very interesting. Of course, he can travel wherever he likes. And he decides, I don't really like Kamsa being soft-hearted. This isn't going to work. Right? Because Krishna's coming to kill Kamsa. It's already determined. And if Kamsa's soft-hearted, then maybe Krishna will get a little soft-hearted. You know, thinking, well, it's not going to work out. We really want to push this. So he comes and he acts as an astrologer. And he says, Kamsa, I have something to tell you. Now, normally Narada Muni can't be seen by people on Earth. He's normally not visible, but he made himself visible to Kamsa and said, let me tell you about your previous life. So we all know the story. It's a very famous story. This is a story not only among the Vaishnavas, but also among the Hindus, among even the Jains, the Sikhs, even the Buddhists. And you go to Cambodia, and there's carvings of this lila, of the churning of the ocean of milk. And the idea was that the nectar churned was going to be shared equally by the demigods and the demons, but didn't work out that way. So there was a huge battle. And in this battle, there was a demon named Kalanimi who was riding on a lion. And he was killed by Vishnu. So Narada Muni said to him, listen, in your last life, you were Kalanimi and you were killed by Vishnu. Whoa. So then Kamsa was even more vengeful that I want to kill Krishna, I want to kill Vishnu. So this is also a real problem for us as conditioned souls, that we want vengeance. Somebody hurts me, I want to hurt them. Somebody hurts me, I want to hurt them. Somebody was talking to me recently, yeah, somebody wrote a nasty comment on the internet on something that I wrote, and therefore I wanted to find something that they wrote and write a nasty comment on their blog, and as soon as I did that, I felt so much better. So this is our general mood. We see this in the story of Amba and Bhishma, right? That Amba had this idea that Bhishma had prevented her from getting married, and so she vowed to kill him, and she took life after life. What a waste, huh? To try to get her revenge against Bhishma. And this is one of the things that draws us, my dear friend, to life after life. You know, yam yam bhakti sambhavam chatatam chaitalevam. Whatever we're thinking about, and if we're thinking about, oh, this person, they hurt me, I want to get back at them. And therefore, Maharaj Chitrakeshu said, maybe the son of mine had died. Maybe he was my enemy in a previous life. And he came as my son and died early just to give me grief. But sometimes, you know, the person we're married to, or our child, or our mother, is somebody we had some antagonism with in a previous life. And we're going on and on and on in this fighting until somebody says, enough. It doesn't have to be, you know, what did Gandhi say, an eye for an eye makes the whole world one. It doesn't have to be, I hurt you, you hurt me, I hurt you. So this was Kamsa. Oh, you killed me in another life? Okay, I'm going to get you. And Narada said, it's not only Krishna who've already killed you in a previous life, but the devas, your eternal enemies, they're taking birth in the families of Yadu and Vishnu. And you're going to be finished. So then Kamsa was very angry. And he immediately imprisoned Vasudeva and Devaki. They said he shackled them in iron chains. And again, if you can think a little bit about what does it mean to enter Krishna's lila. You know, many times people who take up religion, they think if I take up religion, my life will be all sparkly. I have a wonderful spouse, and beautiful, healthy children, and I'll live in a nice house, and I'll have lots of money, and everybody will worship me. And people take up religion for that purpose, right? But here we see Devaki and Vasudev as part of their service, as part of their entrance into the lila, for no fault on their part whatsoever, they were imprisoned in shackles. And then as part of the lila, they had to have more children, right? Would you want to have children if you were shackled in prison? I mean, not to be explicit, but you know. It'd be a little difficult, huh? And that's your service. And knowing, not only they're in prison, but knowing your children are going to be killed because Kamsa took that first son and killed him. And then imprisoned them. And then they wanted to have children as fast as possible. And every time they had a child, right in front of them. So to be in prison and to be shackled, and right in front of you, your children killed one after another. So then we can say, well, wait a minute, I'm not really sure I want to join Krishna Lila. You know, I don't know if I want to surrender to Krishna. Maybe I could engineer my life a little bit better than that. You know, if I was going to write the script, I think I'd write a little different script. So, you know, I'm not really sure. Or maybe I just want to merge into the Brahman where it's all just kind of, you know, shanti, shanti. But to remember that there's 12 rasas, right? Everybody knows the 12 rasas. There's 5 primary rasas. Anybody remember the 7 secondary rasas? Anybody know 7 secondary rasas? Come on, you guys.
Ghastly
rasa, yes. What else?
Vira,
chivalry. What else?
Abhuta,
wonder, compassion, or grief. Laughter. Hasya, laughter. What else? 2 more. Fear and anger. So it's not that it's just vanilla. You know, it's not that spiritual life is just vanilla. Om Shanti. It's variety. Even in this world, people watch sad movies and pay to do it, right? Was it a good movie? Oh, it was good! So there's this variety of enjoyment. And Devaki and Vasudev, you shouldn't think that even though they're going through, I mean, it's a little ghastly having your children killed in front of you. That's pretty ghastly. And fear of Kamsa. But it was all part of the lila. They were relishing being part of Krishna's lila. And this is what we're saying. In Bhakti Matak, we're saying, Maradhi, Rakabhi, Jivani, Marana, Sampada, Vipada. Whatever brings you happiness, Krishna, that is my happiness. And indeed, that is happiness for the devotees. So then, of course, we have, as you said, Balaram. So Balaram, of course, is the original guru. So first, before Krishna can enter one's heart, one has to have guru. One has to have the devotee. I really like that Srila Prabhupada says, guru is not a particular man, guru is the truth. And whoever teaches that truth is guru. Guru is one. And it says, although there's been many thousands and thousands of acharyas, they're all teaching the same thing. I mean, according to time, place, and circumstance, of course. But the real guru, ultimately, is Balaram, Lord Nityananda. So he first appears in the womb of Devaki. Of course, these 6 children who were killed were really lust, anger, envy, greed, and illusion, who die out of the fear of material life represented by Kamsa. But it was understood that this 7th pregnancy of Devaki was a miscarriage, as Balaram was sankarshan, or drawn to the womb of Rohini, another amazing supernatural event. And then, Vasudeva and Devaki didn't have Krishna in the ordinary manner. But first, Krishna filled the heart and the mind of Vasudeva. In fact, the term Vasudeva really means transcendental consciousness. Of course, Krishna's in everyone's heart, Vishwasa, Vidhanam, Jesha, Vinatistiti. But he was there personally. And Vasudev became fully aware, if we can think for a minute what that would be, to be fully aware that Krishna in his original form is there filling your whole heart and mind. And Vasudev was therefore completely in the transcendental position. And then as he looked at his wife, just like the moon is rising on the horizon as the sun is setting and the rays of the setting sun are transferred to the rising moon. So just like that, Vasudev glancing at Devaki, Krishna was transferred from his heart and mind and filled Devaki's heart and mind. And as Krishna filled Devaki's heart and mind, he literally entered into her womb. And she gave up in her prayers later. She said, nobody will believe this. She said, I'll be an object of ridicule. And how could the Supreme enter into the womb of an ordinary person? Of course, she's not an ordinary person. And as the Lord, in his original Supreme form, Swayam Bhagavan, entered into Devaki's womb, of course, carrying the Lord, she was transformed. And who noticed her transformation? Kamsa. It said that because she was in the prison, she looked like a fire hidden under a pot, or a suppressed fire, or a misused education. So this is often the case when one becomes enlightened and filled with Krishna, that one cannot show this enlightenment among people in general. We even find in religious systems that great saintly persons who achieve enlightenment often are persecuted by the leaders of their very religion that taught them the path to enlightenment. Isn't that a fact? Yeah? And we find this in all the religions of the world. We find even Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would often have an upwelling of ecstatic symptoms in a public place, and then he would see, oh, the people around, they're not going to understand. Like when you start running in the way, the Brahmins would go, they're not going to understand. And so he didn't exhibit his symptoms. So this is the general principle, that when Krishna is welling in one's heart, almost like a volcano of emotion, that if this is displayed for the public, there's simply criticism. So Devaki had Krishna in her heart, but she was hidden in Kamsa's prison. Nobody could see. It was a very private and intimate thing for her. And then Kamsa was thinking, okay, this is it. Now Krishna's come, Vishnu's come, he's going to kill me. And he thought, well, maybe I could, you know, give Devaki an abortion, kill Devaki now. And he thought, you know, that's not going to work. Because you see, even the demons have a line. Have you noticed that? Even just like Hitler, he had his girlfriend who was nice to him. Some big mob boss, you know, he's nice to his dog. I mean, seriously, even the most demoniac people, they have a certain line that they don't cross. They say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do that. So Kamsa decided, if I kill this pregnant woman, even my demon friends will criticize me. You know, they're not going to let me take it that far. I'm going to have to wait till the child is born. And of course, very interesting here in the story, that Kamsa becomes, he had been up until this point, but especially at this point, he becomes absorbed in Krishna consciousness. He becomes absorbed in consciousness of Krishna, but it's not bhakti. Because we all know the definition of bhakti. Anyabhivasitashanyam, gyanakamma, anavitam, anukamma, krishna, anushirinam, bhakti, uttamam. So what's the most important word in that verse? Anukamma. With the intention of pleasing Krishna. With the intention of pleasing Krishna. Just like Mother Yasoda, she took care of the milk with the intention of pleasing Krishna. So even though he was angry, it's bhakti. And the wrestlers, Chinur and Mustika, although they pleased Krishna, their intention was to kill Krishna, so it's not bhakti. So Kamsa was absorbed in Krishna, which gave him, of course, Swarupi liberation, but it didn't allow him to enter into the intimate Leelas. So as Vasudeva and Devaki are in prison, and Kamsa is totally absorbed in Krishna consciousness, but through fear, and quote, Kamsa Hajapanayana Giti, that's all you know, who is there, you love all, so I'm changing the tasks, so I'm changing the time, operating. all of the demigods who had gone before Brahma, who wanted Vishnu to come. They were very happy, and they appeared invisible or partially visible. Sometimes Vasudeva and Devaki could see them and hear them. And they were praying to the Lord. And one of the most wonderful prayers of the demigods, that one that I really like, is where they say, the same persons get in the boat of your lotus feet on this side of the ocean. But as soon as they approach the boat, the ocean becomes as small as the water in a little calf's footprint, and they immediately cross the ocean, and therefore the boat remains on this side. So I really like this prayer because, at least for me, I don't know about all of you, but at least for me, my material attachments, my demoniac tendencies, my demoniac behavior, are like an ocean. I feel like they're like an ocean, and I feel like no matter what I do to try to better myself, and what I do to try to be a good person, and what I try to do to be a devotee, that it's just this huge ocean. It's something like the Pacific, that it just goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. Even if one in Arta goes, there's a million of them jump up to take their place, like the grooms and the sorcerer's apprentice. You know? It's just this never-ending ocean. It's really overwhelming. It's just overwhelming. We find many times devotees become discouraged and give up in their spiritual life when they see this ocean. You know, when you're just a gross materialist, you don't even think there's anything wrong with you. You just think you're a nice person. And once you start taking to the process of bhakti, one of the first things that you start to see is this ocean of evil in your heart, and the actual evil. When you start, you see, I'm just full of evil. I'm full of evil intentions, I'm full of evil motives, I'm full of evil behaviors. I'm very selfish, and it becomes very overwhelming. And many people at that point, either they just take up religion very officially, or they stop, at least to some extent. But the demigods said, you don't have to worry about this. You don't have to worry about this, because as soon as you approach the boat, you don't even have to get in the boat. You don't even have to get in the boat. You just have to approach the boat. And as soon as you approach the boat, everything becomes so small. We don't, you know, most of us don't see a lot of calves, but if you meet up like a big dog, maybe, unless you have a calf, you know, it's small, puddle. If it's a muddy day and some dogs walking and there's some waters in that print, you don't even think about it. You just step over it. You don't even notice it. It's nothing. And we all have this experience. Just like many times when I'm preaching about Krishna consciousness in the world, people will come to me and say, well, what do I do? My mother doesn't like Krishna consciousness. My husband doesn't like Krishna consciousness. What am I going to do about my friends? And it seems like such an insignificant problem. And then I remember the time in my life when that was a big problem. When to me that was an insurmountable problem. And how was I going to deal with it? And it's gone. It's gone. So all of the anarchies and the struggles and the evil that we see in our heart, as soon as we really approach the boat of Krishna's lotus feet, they're nothing. They're gone. We pass over them immediately. And this is really our process, my dear friends. Our process is not so much an artha nivritti. Our process is much more artha pravritti. Maya shaktam na partha. Again, one of my favorite classes of Srila Prabhupada in Sanan, India, where he's talking to general public. He's not talking to practicing devotees. And he says, just become attached to Krishna. He said, you already know how to become attached. However attached you are now to your family, to whatever, just turn up to Krishna. So the demigods are saying that as soon as you become attached to Krishna, not as an official religion, not as a, well, I'm so pukka, I chant this, I do that. But as soon as the heart starts becoming attached to Krishna, even a little bit, so the Prabhupada says, if we can follow the residents of Vrindavan even to a minute degree, just a little genuine attachment, emotion to Krishna, then all of the anarchies become nothing. So the demigods are giving these prayers. While Krishna is in the womb, don't be afraid of your brother. Don't be afraid of Kamsa. So then, as we were saying, Kamsa had wreaked havoc on the planet. Everyone was always in anxiety and could be arrested for no reason. The land, the water, the air, everything was being polluted and spoiled. The trees were being cut down. It was a horrible situation. But right then, everything shifted. There was fragrant breezes. There was celestial sounds. The Brahmins could perform their yajnas. Nobody interfered with the chanting of mantras. The sensation of bodily touch was very pleasing. Everyone felt peace and satisfaction in the core of their heart. And then, at midnight, the Lord appeared. offered their prayers to the child, who appeared with four hands, a full head of hair, dazzling yellow garments, jewelry. And it's very interesting if you think about how much time has gone past since the demigods went to Lord Brahma. Brahma told the demigods and the devotees to incarnate. Vasudeva and Devaki, they take birth, they grow up, they get married, they have all these children, and now Krishna's there. So if this was me, you know, as soon as Krishna appeared, I'd say, okay, kill him! Yeah, what are you waiting for? But that's not how they respond. Devaki says, I think Kamsa's going to kill you. He said, and it's a little difficult, you're looking like this. You know, would you look like an ordinary baby so that I can hide you somewhere? So this is the mood of the devotee. The devotee is thinking about how to serve Krishna, not how Krishna can serve me. Now, okay, Krishna, now you've shown up. Hey, I have this problem. Let's try to think about this for a minute, all right? This is your service for Krishna, to be Krishna's mother and father. And in this service for Krishna, you have been shackled in iron chains for years. And all you're doing there in prison is having babies for Kamsa to kill. And Krishna shows up and you don't say, hey Krishna, save me. Cut off the chains, get me out of here, kill Kamsa. I'm glad you finally showed up. It's about time. You know, we have a problem when we go to Krishna and we say, can you solve it now? They didn't say that. That wasn't their response. Their response is, oh, you're here. How can I serve you? How can I protect you? And then, of course, the Lord tells them how in their previous lives they were his parents, as Krishna, as Uttapa, as Kasyapa, and Aditi, And he says, please take me across the Yamuna to Raja. And this also is very astonishing. So just like we're chanting and chanting, Krishna, please come, Krishna, please come, Krishna, please come. So imagine Krishna comes and he says, now I'm going to go someplace else. Goodbye. I just came for a moment. He says, please carry me across the Yamuna and trade me with the daughter of Bhagavan to his soul. And of course, Vasudeva says, well, I can't. So this also happens to us. We get an instruction from Guru, from the Vaishnavas, from Krishna, and we look and we say, I can't. And he really couldn't, could he? I mean, he couldn't. So many times, you know, you talk to devotees who are struggling with this thing or that thing, and you say to them, look, just do this. And they say, but I can't. And often there, I can't is very real to them. I mean, what's more real than iron shackles around your arms and legs? And a locked gate and guards. Is there anything more real than that? Do any of us have an I can't that's that heavy? You know, we're told, take this vow, no illicit sex, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling. These 16 hours, 3 bio trees. I can't. Treat friends and enemies equally. I can't. Serve the Vaishnavas. I can't. It's too hard. Just work without caring about the results. Give up all the results to Krishna. Just fight for the sake. I can't. But they had a real I can't. Don't worry, we'll take care of that. And this is what happens when one follows the order. One gets the Shakti to follow the order. When one follows the order, one gets the Shakti to follow the order. Always. Always. If we look at our problems, we say, I can't. It's impossible. But when we say, all right, it's your order, I will do it. Like that Brahmana who couldn't read and he was reading the Bhagavad Gita, although he couldn't read. And Mahaprabhu said, you've actually read the Bhagavad Gita. So as soon as one says, yes, I can't, it's impossible, but I'm going to do my best anyway. Then the Shakti is given. I love the story of Bhima and Jarasandha. Krishna says, fight, kill Jarasandha. Okay, and I can't. 28 days, nashaktam Jarasandha, near Jaitanya, do not if I can't. Then Krishna says, okay, apyayam swanatheja, so I give you my potency. So then all the camps melted. The chains fell off, the doors opened, the guards went to sleep, and then it was raining, pouring. And then there was Ananta Sesha as an umbrella. And then there's the Yamuna in the rainy season, and then the water parts. And then how are you going to do this? You know, I mean, you're going to just walk into somebody's house and take their baby? But Yasoda was sleeping. And again he went across to Jerusalem. And again he went into the prison. And the doors closed and the shackles went on. And the guards were awake. When one takes to Krishna consciousness, everybody else may see, oh, here's another person in a material body shackled by the illusory energy. But that's not what's going on at all. They're in a different place. And then the guards woke up, Kamsa, Kamsa! The baby's crying, it's been born, but it's a girl. You know, Kamsa didn't say, ooh. He went there anyway. Now the death of my life is born and he came. And Vaidevaki said, for Yasoda's daughter, please don't kill this girl. You killed so many of my children, shining like fire, giving me this child as a gift. And no compassion. Of course, it wasn't an ordinary girl. In our Vedic literature, we have some pretty powerful women. So he takes this girl and dashes her, and immediately she appears as Durga, which really impressed Kamsa because he was a worshiper of Durga. So. All of a sudden, he was impressed with Vasudeva and Devaki. Wow, that must be pretty special. They had Durga as their daughter. And she says, second time, Kamsa's called a fool by the celestials, and he couldn't do anything about it. You're a fool! The child who will kill you is somewhere else. Then Kamsa does something very interesting. He apologizes. But does he really apologize? So, you know, sometimes when we're caught with our hand in the cookie jar, we apologize, but it's not a real apology. It wasn't deep. How did you know it wasn't deep? He says, you know, it wasn't my fault. I listened to the celestial voice, and it was a liar. You know, it's not my fault that I believe the demigods were lying. And, you know, it's not really my fault. It was your children's karma. How can you blame me for your children's karma? So what kind of an apology is that? There wasn't any sort of deep transformation in Kamsa's heart. He was crying. He was probably crying because the kid he wanted to kill wasn't there anymore, more than anything else. I mean, what he was really upset about is I made this whole intricate plan and it didn't work out. So then he unshackles them, they get out of prison for a while. And he's feeling, I guess, it's useless. And then, of course, we see the power of Sangha. That he goes the next day to his ministers and he says, well, I can't do anything about this. I did everything I could and it's just not going to work. I don't know where the child is. And they say, what are you worried about these demigods? Why don't you just kill all the babies born in the last, all the male children born in the last 10 days? So, of course, then later, much later on, Krishna does go to Mathura and finish Kamsa in his own time and in his own way. So Krishna will also destroy all of our obstacles, all of our demons, when he wants, in his own time, in his own way, not necessarily at our order. So Janma Karma to me divyana vana vati tatkata tvakvita inha pinarjama nankimam ekiswakimam. So one who understands this appearance and activities of the Lord, then they never take birth again. They attain to the Lord's planet. And these wonderful activities, we all want to hear about somebody's wonderful activities. we have this natural inclination. We may hear about some movie star or some sports figure or some politician or something like that. And if we absorb our mind instead in these activities, then certainly we will feel great happiness in this life. And we do not have to anymore transmigrate to one body or another in this birth, death, old age, and disease, and this forgetfulness of this life. So thank you very much. So what's next on our agenda?
Everybody gets a chance to stand up.
Jai Krishna Janmashtami ki! Jai!